Hey, everybody. Today in the Charlie Kirk Show, Peter Navarro, author of In Trump Time, phenomenal conversation about what actually happened to the Trump White House, holding China accountable, what happened in the 2020 election, and so much more. Email us your thoughts, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. That's freedom@charliekirk.com. If you want to support our program, you can do so by going to charliekirk.com/support. If you want to get involved with Turning Point USA, go to tpusa.com, tpusa.com, where we play offense with a sense of urgency to win the American culture war. Peter Navarro is here. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Hey, everybody. This episode is brought to you by my friends at ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN.com/Charlie. Secure your device, anonymize your online activity, protect your action online. ExpressVPN.com/Charlie. Help our show out by also helping yourself protect yourself. ExpressVPN.com/Charlie. Hey, everybody, welcome to this episode of the Charlie Kirk Show. With us today is Peter Navarro, one of the most important people that served in the Trump administration and was loyal to the president to the very end, which was somewhat of a rarity. And he has a new book coming out. It might already be out, actually. I don't know, but it's In Trump Time, and I want him to talk about it. Peter, welcome to the Charlie Kirk Show.
Charlie, my friend. Hey, look, before we get started, I just want to commend you for building arguably the most important platform for the future of conservatism in the Republican Party. You are able to harness the young folks of America. These are the new deplorables. These are the people who, because of the policies of the globalists, the Biden regime and others, are being treated essentially like serfs. You know, they won't own a car. They won't own a home. It's going to have a hard time to form a family, things like that. But Charlie Kirk's out there with Turning Point USA, as I say here, Turning Point USA rocks. And so kudos to you, sir. The book itself, In Trump Time, just for the record, it's available now on Amazon. It's already a bestseller on Amazon for pre-order. I'd really appreciate it if anybody there out there in Turning Point land goes to Amazon. Charlie will give you a link, maybe put up on his website. But the book's important because it's the last year, it's my journal, literally, of America's plague year. It's the last year of the Trump administration. And we really are dedicated getting to the truth of three things, and I know Charlie is too. You know, what happened on November 3rd, the election, what happened on January 6th, and what happened in that Wuhan lab with the pandemic. And there's all sorts of heroes, but there's a lot of villains in Trump time as well.
So I want to talk about the villains because that's more interesting and I think more important, especially as we think about what kind of conservative movement do we want to build long term, the MAGA movement, you know, the nationalist movement in a good way. Let's just pick about one of those things one by one. Let's talk about the election first, 11-3, which I was not overly shocked, but very disappointed that Republican governors in certain swing states were so unprepared for the deluge of mail-in ballots, for the changing in voter laws. How is it, Peter, that the Trump campaign, not President Trump, but parts of the campaign and the Republican Party were so unprepared for what the Democrats did to us on Election Day?
Yeah, that's a great question, Charlie. And just as we talk today, I'm not going to be coy about things if for no other reason. However, Then the book's coming out not till November 3rd, and I'm under some obligation not to reveal too much. Having said that, there's several chapters in the book that address what essentially was the incompetence at some point with the campaign, but also I think the treachery. And there's people in there who were basically trying to run the show, didn't do a very good job. But after after November 3rd, when push came to shove, when we really should have been contesting the election like happened with Bush v. Gore, they were caught with their pants down. And they compounded the error, as I talk about in Trump time, by not putting their pants back up when it came time. And there's a, you know, I let that go for a few weeks after the election, because so that wasn't my lane. You know, I had stuff to do at the White House. But at one point, and it was Thanksgiving Day, I walked into my office. You know, the tagline in the book is no turkey, no football, no problem. I sat down and rolled up my sleeves and went about authoring what became a 3-volume report on election irregularities, election fraud. It's a Navarro report. I reprise that in the book In Trump Time and dramatically expand on it, a la the results we're getting from Arizona. But Charlie, the thing that really struck me was the long time horizon that the Democrat Party used to steal the election. It wasn't overnight. It wasn't just in the year of the pandemic. They literally began preparing to steal that election literally the nanosecond after Donald Trump got elected. And shame on several people in the campaign, as I do, for not being ready for that. When, and again, in the book, In Trump Time, I explain in detail the information they had actually gotten, Charlie, but did not act on.
When is the last time you think you had American meat? Chances are it's been way too long. Did you know that 80% of grass-fed beef sold in the United States is imported from overseas? My friends, the Good Ranchers, have traveled the country on a mission to help the American family. How? By working together with local farms and ranches and shipping straight to your door. GoodRanchers.com is a safe and convenient way to order your meat. They save your family money and help the American farmer. At GoodRanchers.com, it's pretty incredible because what they have is this incredible program where they go across the entire country, they search for the best meat, then they ship it to you. You get the steakhouse quality you deserve at a price every family can afford. Don't bring mystery meats into your home. Be the hero your family needs by ordering Good Ranchers today. Go to goodranchers.com to buy now or subscribe today and save 20% on each box of mouthwatering meats. Subscribing brings down the cost to less than $5 a meal. Plus, right now, get an additional $20 off and free express shipping if you go to goodranchers.com/Charlie or use code Charlie at checkout. That's $20 off and free express shipping at goodranchers.com/Charlie. Know where your meat comes from with goodranchers.com. I'm telling you, Good Ranchers is amazing. I've got to know the team there very well. Not all meat that says is American meat is actually American meat, because they just put that label on there and it's actually not totally true. If it's just cut in America, it can be called American meats. Go to goodranchers.com/Charlie or use promo code Charlie at checkout. Do it right now.
Well, and this is one of the things that frustrates me the most, Peter. And I had nowhere near as many meetings as you did like this, but I remember being in the outer oval. I think that's what they called it, the small office that the president always sit and do meetings.
Yeah, that's where Scavino sits. My best buds in the White House.
Yes.
Who was in there? Who were the suspects in there?
So it wasn't the outer oval. It was then the area where the president had he would used to watch TV and.
Oh yeah, the dining room. That's great.
Right.
That's
yes.
A great place to meet.
So I hadn't been there nearly as much as you, but I remember being there in July of last summer, and he was getting phone calls from operatives in Georgia saying there's nothing to worry about in the mail-in ballots, everything is fine. And the president's instincts were, no, there is something wrong with this. And I did my part and obviously failed miserably to try to tell him that he was being lied to by certain operatives in Georgia. And as we know, we were proven right, because Brian Kemp secretly and privately signed a consent decree with Stacey Abrams, relaxing the signature threshold as we go from 248,000 ballots to 1.2 million ballots. I know you talk about this in your book and you have to kind of maneuver through that. So we have to have you back on our program once the book is public. But can you talk about that, Peter, on how the president's instincts were correct the whole time and he seemed to be undermined? It's so frustrating.
Well, there's a couple of players, like Cleta Mitchell, for example, is one of the heroines in Trump time, and I'll just give you a little sliver.
She was
all over this. I mean, she knew what was going on, but she was battling people both down in Georgia, as well as people inside the White House. And I think that there was a lack of ability to see very clearly just how treacherous that Brian Kemp and Raffensperger were. If you peel back the curtain here on how they stole it, one of the themes in the book In Trump Time is how they captured, Charlie, the secretaries of state position across the country. Most people think of that as a down ballot position that doesn't have much consequence. You know, it's maybe a stepping stone for lieutenant governor or governor in most states. But no. The Democrats understood very clearly that it's the secretaries of state that run the election processes. And if you can grab those folks and get them on your side, they can help you steal elections. So I go into detail about what happened in Michigan, what happened in Pennsylvania with the secretaries of state. They were Democrats, but I mean, in Arizona and Georgia, Charlie, those are Republicans, right? Those are Republicans that screwed the president. And that you know, shame on them, shame on the Republican Party. And look, here's the thing, Charlie, you fight this every day. There's a battle for the heart and soul of the Republican Party.
Yes.
Now, Trump, USA, Turning Point USA represent the deplorable. They represent secure borders, an end to endless wars. They represent manufacturing jobs onshore here in America. They represent getting tough on China. A lot of the Rhino Republicans are they're on the opposite side of that, right? They want to send our jobs to China. Because why is that? Because they're controlled by corporate donors. Okay. Down in Georgia, it's Coca-Cola and Delta that run politics down there. And what they want to do is send our jobs offshore. They like open borders because it's cheap labor. They don't really care about endless wars, other than the fact that maybe it's good for the defense industry. This is what the battle's about, right? And you saw very clearly, Charlie, who abandoned ship after November 3rd. You indicated at the beginning of this discussion, you saw that there were very few people who remained loyal to the president because they thought he was weakened and dead, but he's coming back, right? Because the power of his ideas are really what's grabbing this nation. And we're seeing now, look, elections have consequences, Charlie. Stolen elections have particularly dire consequences.
So let's talk on that, because it seems that so many people in the Republican Party are afraid to talk about how this last election was conducted illegally. And you have been one of the few people that have been willing to articulate this in a way that the common man can understand in the different buckets. You just start with social media interference, about how the tech companies didn't allow us to spread the Hunter Biden story. Then you talk about the ballots issues, and you talk about the counting issues, and you just talk about the administrative issues of how the whole election was conducted illegally, and the $400 million from Mark Zuckerberg. You put all this together. At the very least, the most innocent reading is that this was the most interfered with election in American history in an unprecedented way. And yet you go a level deeper, all of a sudden you say at a pretty, you know, moderate reading, this thing was conducted fraudulently. And the conclusion is one that you and I believe that it was taken from the president, but was at the very least done in a way that we don't even know the winner. So let's talk about Arizona. Is it time to decertify Arizona or go in that direction based on what the audit results have showed us?
No doubt, Charlie. And in my what I called the Navarro report, and I did that not out of ego, but simply to make sure that it was clearly identified as an action outside my White House duties. Okay, that's why we call it Navarro report, the 3-volume report. And what's really interesting is that those 3 volumes, the tables in there, were used basically subsequent as a template for these audits that were done in Arizona, they're being done in Georgia, they're being pursued in Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin, right? And what's interesting, Charlie, is that what I did was I poured over thousands and thousands of affidavits. I read every court case. I looked into all the press coverage of this, and used my skills as a Harvard researcher basically to do estimates of likely illegal votes. And so, if you take Arizona, you've got an alleged Biden victory margin of about 11,000 votes. I mean, that's so small that right there, you know, that Fox News never should have called Arizona prematurely. Right there. That's way too small. But here's the thing, you know, what this initial audit has found in Arizona is a 5x delta. In other words, there's over 50,000 votes that are illegal, that were identified as illegal in Arizona by this audit, okay? And that's in Maricopa County alone, and it doesn't include the category of illegal aliens. So it's a conservative lower bound estimate of the number of illegal ballots in Arizona. Now let's do the math. Those 50,000 plus votes are absentee and mail-in ballots. Why does that matter? It means that we know for a fact that Biden, Trump won at the ballot box. Mm-hmm. Biden won in the absentee ballots, at least some of which are cast. So there's like a 2-to-1 to 3-to-1 margin that Biden holds in these absentee ballots. So if you take 50,000 illegal ones out, right, that's a 2-to-1 or 3-to-1 swing for Trump. And right there, those ballots alone, Charlie, by the Navarro Report math, say that Trump won Arizona. And that's they're just getting started.
Did you know that if you shop at Nike, they turn around and give your hard-earned dollars to pro-abortion groups like Planned Parenthood and the Population Council? Sinister folks, by the way. Did you know that Airbnb gave $500,000 to the Marxist BLM Incorporated organization? Your first vote is at the ballot box, but that isn't enough to defend our traditional Judeo-Christian values. Left-wing corporations who are woke are subverting our nation and our republic by taking money from conservative customers and giving it to radical organizations that support abortion, gun control, and critical race theory. You have another vote, a second vote at the checkout line, which is why there's a massively important organization called Second Vote that comes in. I know them very well. I've known them for years, and I'm so honored to partner with them. And the courageous people at Second Vote are exposing corporations for how they spend your money. So check out secondvote.com today. Second Vote is developing incredible tools and engaging the smartest minds in the country to help inform Americans' purchasing decisions. Their work is arduous, complex, and exhaustive, and it doesn't happen for free. So please support their work so we can defend our future from the woke Marxist mob. So here's what I want you to do. Do what I did. Just go right now to secondvote.com and subscribe. It's $50 a year. I know it costs something, but they have to be able to pay for their research. And the Black family, who are amazing people, by the way, have underwritten this effort for quite some time. But if you use the promo code Charlie, you get 50% off. That's $25 a year, everybody. Okay? That's literally $2 a month. And that's 50% off to $25 a year. That's $2.5 a month at that, so that you can have the information you need on your next purchase. So join me, go to secondvote.com and subscribe with promo code Charlie. Maybe it's like, hey, I don't know if the car I'm buying, are they donating to Planned Parenthood? What about all these companies? Secondvote.com has every company ranked. It's a beautiful thing. Go to secondvote.com and subscribe with promo code Charlie today.
Well, and that's just one county. So we're here in Arizona right now. Yes. Sometimes this gets mislabeled.
We need Pima. We need Cochise. We need the illegal aliens. We need a Coconino. Full,
yes.
I would say it's the canvas, not the count, Charlie.
Yes.
It's like there was like the left-wing press and even like the Wall Street Journal and Fox seized upon a little piece of that news from Arizona to say that there was nothing in the count that indicated that Trump won. Well, the point really was it was the canvas. It's like if you've got like a million votes counted and then you recount them and you still got a million votes, that's the count. But if 20% of those votes are illegal, that's the canvas. And that's what happened, Charlie. In Trump Time, the book, I go into this thing. It's the strategy of I call it the grand stuff the ballot box strategy. And it had two prongs to it. It's really stuff that ballot box using things like ballot harvesting. But at the same time, Charlie, this is the important point, is take the election cops off the beat. That's what they did in Georgia with that consent decree. It's like, so Trump won, bottom line. And I think when people get to the end of In Trump Time, they're going to realize that Fauci lied and Americans died and that he's likely responsible for the pandemic and he needs to be gone. They're going to find out that Trump won the election. They're going to find out all the things that China, communist China, has to do with all of this.
So talk about being in the White House with the serpent around you, Fauci. And some people would say, and I just have to, I defend the president in this regard, even though I think that one adjustment could have been very helpful. Some people say, why didn't he fire Fauci? I think that would have been a mistake because that would have created a martyr on the outside. Do I think that he should have tried to put him on a committee and try to lessen his impact? Yes. I think keeping Fauci around the White House was something that actually benefited the other side of the regime. Can you talk about how treacherous this man is, how he manipulated the government, quite honestly, how he was able to lie to President Trump?
Well, there's some great scenes in the book. Yeah, I tried to write the book for the ear rather than the eye. So it's like we're having a conversation, but I also try to make it cinematic as well. And there's a number of showdowns I have with Fauci. And the second chapter really is my first encounter with Fauci in the Situation Room. And I didn't know him beforehand. I had no preconceptions about him at all.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a meeting about the China travel ban. And by the time I got to the end of the meeting, I thought to myself, this is a man who thinks he's smarter than he is. He's arrogant, full of hubris, and he's going to stab the president in the back. And that was on January 28th, 2020, wow. Charlie. And that was based on 30 minutes in the Situation Room. I weighed and measured him, and he came up wanting. And there would be spots all through writing up to election day. And I show this in the book in detail. I tell you, Charlie, by the time people get reading and finish reading In Trump Time, Sherry Markson's book, What Happened in Wuhan, and Robert Kennedy's book about Fauci and the source of the Wuhan lab. If that guy still has a job, then this country and this country's media is even more screwed up.
Yes.
Then you and I believe it is. And we believe it's really screwed up because Fauci, I mean, he at every turn, he tried to stick knives in the back and chest of the president of the United States. So to feather his own nest and Big Pharma's nest.
Yeah. And I'm not trying to get into the coulda, woulda, shoulda stuff. I think that's largely unhelpful. I do think it's important, though, to figure out who are the people that were undermining the mandate to govern in a very specific way. And Fauci is one of those people. And so I do want to ask the question, though, because there was a movement led by you, as we found out that this came from China, to stop some sort of a movement to try and make China pay for the virus.
Yes. Yeah.
There was a potential legislative effort. Now, the rumor mill of my sources, which are nowhere nearly like yours because you actually lived it, is that Mnuchin and some people in the Treasury got in the way of this and said, this will tank the market. You can't do this. Don't do that. Is it true that there was a movement that was stopped to try to hold China accountable while President Trump was in office?
Yeah, there's a whole two chapters in the book about the arc of my attempt to get an executive order signed that would have created a presidential commission to examine the origins of the virus, the cost of the virus, and, Charlie, also how China, communist China, is using the virus as we speak to further their geopolitical advantage. For example, Hong Kong, on that note, Hong Kong would still be free today if not for the Communist Chinese Party virus. Why? Because the CCP used the virus to lock protesters into their apartments, prevent them from protesting, and with no one on the streets, they basically took their jackboots and put the hammer down. Mnuchin, by the time you get to the end of the book, I think it'll be a toss-up as to whether Fauci or Mnuchin did more damage to this republic and this president. He's a bad guy. I fought him from day one. I think you saw kind of the recent news how he raised a couple billion now for his hedge fund. The headline was it came from Saudi Arabia, but the reality is a lot of Chinese money funneled in into that. Then he's trying to hide that. He's a bad dude, and you'll see that in Trump time, big time.
If you run a conservative or faith-based business or organizations that accept credit cards for donations, events, and merchandise or anything, listen carefully. Do not expose yourself to being shut off because of cancel culture. The Charlie Kirk Show relies on Cornerstone Payment Systems to provide uninterrupted credit card processing for all of our work. We trust Cornerstone for our processing because I believe, and I think you will too, you'll benefit from their solutions, their low costs, and most importantly, their commitment to safeguard your transactions. Cornerstone provides all types of credit card solutions, including e-commerce, retail, donations, crowdfunding, and text to give. Please contact Cornerstone Payment Systems today and let them know you heard about them on my show. You can reach Cornerstone at 714-912-2617 or online at cornerstone.cc/Kirk. Again, that's cornerstone.cc/KIRK. Let them know I sent you.
Well, and what's so disappointing is that despite what we believe happened with the mail-in ballots and, you know, all the process, I think that this was a failed opportunity politically to create a necessary villain in the midst of suffering. And the media knew this and the corporate class knew this because when people are suffering, they need a villain. And guess what? For some Americans, Donald Trump filled that villain void, and wrongly. But the media was looking for someone to blame. And I just, the president's instincts were terrific. Try to call it China virus and all this. But instead, it seems like you want to chime in, so please.
Well, you're absolutely right, Charlie. I mean, I had a number of misses and regrets in the White House because of people like Mnuchin. That I think might be the biggest one, the fact that I couldn't get that executive order to signature. And I say that now because I still got that order. And Congress ought to do it. The Biden regime, we know, won't do it, but they should. We need to hold China, communist China, the Chinese Communist Party, accountable for the cost and get reparations. I mean, again, in the book In Trump Time, I have a whole half a chapter on how much that costs us, right? And I go into granular detail, as I always do. But I can tell you the top line is north of $20 trillion or a year's worth of our GDP. We should, I mean, look, they've killed, I mean, there's blood on Fauci's hands, there's blood on CNN's hands, there's blood on the Chinese Communist Party hands. And so far, all of those folks are skating free of blame because the game, Charlie, was to blame Donald Trump for all the woes afflicting us. Now we see, hey, Joe Biden, hey, Joe, it's harder than it looks, okay? Donald Trump did a heck of a job, and the people who were around him, the good ones, giving him good advice, did a heck of a job as well. Because at the end of the day, we had the strongest economy in modern history. We stood up to China. We closed that border. And now we're seeing what happens when you have incompetence, corruption, globalists running the show.
So the book is In Trump Time. Everyone, check it out. We are going to link to it at charliekirk.com. Just we want to make sure the good guys get supported. And I could tell you guys, I visited the White House a couple dozen times, and I got to know some people all over the White House in the Eisenhower Executive Building, where I believe, Peter, you had a whole office there. And
I did.
Peter was one of the only people that would constantly be trying to actually fulfill the mandate of why Donald Trump got elected. He was there early. He was there late. And I don't want to spoil any parts of the book, and I don't want to get anything wrong, but I could name plenty of names of people in the White House, and I played nice with everybody because it just wasn't my role. I'm a civilian, right? I'm not there. That were undermining the president on a day-to-day basis. He doesn't know better. We know better than he does. And Peter, do you want to comment on that? Because I think it's just from my own superficial reading, it was revealed on
the anniversary of the election when the book is finally released. And I'll come back on your show if you want.
Yes,
to have me,
please.
And we'll compare our villains and heroes. But this here behind, by the way, Turning Point USA rocks.
I love it.
Clear about that. But this was actually the view from my office. I had the corner office on the first floor.
Yes.
Of the so-called EEOB.
I was in there a couple times.
And it was the tragedy of the administration. And I know the president will get this right when he wins in 2024. But, you know, we had Mattis, we had Tillerson, we had Mnuchin, we had John Kelly, we had all sorts of people who really did not support the Trump agenda, and in many cases actively undermined it, did not obey the chain of command, particularly ironic for the military guys, the Mattises and the Kellys. I mean, the chain of command is supposed to be everything. Here you had the commander in chief, and they wouldn't follow orders. I mean, it's just a shame on them. I think McMaster fell into the same crew, but there were others in there, and I'll get deep into that when the time comes.
So you've said it already, but let's reemphasize it for our listeners. Trump's running again in 2024. It sure looks that way. And if so, what's the plan? What is anything different? Is it going to be more 2016 style Trump, or are we going to see a Trump 2.0? I'm curious your take on that.
Look, during the 2016 campaign, I was the top economic and trade advisor, and I developed this mantra, which became kind of the mantra of the administration. It was like 4 points of the policy compass to drive growth. It was corporate tax cuts to bring investment onshore. It was strategic energy dominance so that we could have cheap energy. It was deregulation. And most important for my remit, it was not free trade, but fair trade for American workers. When I got in there, the president developed some additional things and I was involved in them. One of them was dramatically increasing the defense budget. So that was a fifth point of the compass. And then the other thing was arms transfers to our allies. You know, the previous administrations didn't want to sell weapon systems to our allies so that they can practice themselves. But that creates a heck of a amount of jobs. So in terms of growth, that's, Charlie, that's the foundation of how we were able to consistently beat economic projections. 2024 is going to be hellish because we're going to be in a worse place than we were coming in. We were inheriting in 2016 the slow growth of the Obama-Biden regime. In 2024, President Trump is likely going to be inheriting a significant stagflation, which is a combination of recession and inflation. It's going to be very, very challenging. We're going to have to repair relationships. I mean, with Israel, for example, the Biden administration, he's got the squad. He's got Omar and Tlaib, two of the most despicable people I've ever seen in public office.
I totally
agree. Who are basically destroying our foreign policy in the Middle East. So there's a lot of wreckage that we're going to have to clean up. But the book In Trump Time lays out the vision. The last in the epilogue, I go at length about what the shouldas be. You know, the a lot of the book is coulda, woulda, but at the end, it's the shoulda. And I'm looking towards the future. It's exactly what we're doing. And good for you, Charlie, for fighting this crazy forced vaccination policy,
yes,
particularly for our children and young and healthy people. But good for you.
Thank you. We announced it back in early July, to the kind of chagrin to so many institutional conservatives. Oh, no one's mandating it. I said, of course they're mandating it. Just wait to see what comes next. And we've won some battles and lost some battles. I've been stunned, honestly, Peter, at how many Republicans have been okay with these forced vaccinations. Okay, you have a tough stop, a hard stop, and so do we in 2 minutes. Speak to the everyday man, the common citizen. They buy your book in Trump time, which they need to do. What can they do from now to 2022 and 2024? Because people's patience is wearing thin.
Yeah, well, the canon of Bannon as a report in Trump time is action, action, action. So paying attention to what Turning Point USA is doing. I'm a guest host a lot on Steve Bannon's War Room Pandemic. And we have all sorts of action items for people to do to get involved at the local politics level, to take over the Republican Party in the name of Trumpism, to force full forensic audits, to get to the bottom of the truth. It's important that the young folk here not just bitch and moan on social media, that they get out and get involved, because you guys are the future, Charlie. And if you want a great future, you're going to have to help shape it with Trumpism and Donald Trump. And so that would be my advice. Action, action, action. Get involved. And it's sure been nice talking to you.
Very good, Peter. Thank you so much. In Trump time, everyone check it out. We'll also link to it at charliekirk.com to your preferred link. Keep up the great work, Peter. God bless you. Thank you so much.
You too, Charlie. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us your thoughts, freedom@charliekirk.com. And thanks so much for listening. God bless. Talk to you soon.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.